Who are interested in drama, studying, meditating. And as I see, most of you are in your 30s, 40s, 50s. You've done quite a lot in your life, experienced quite a lot of things. And you have your success and also your disappointments in your life too. And now I think you are ready for something better. In fact, you have been doing it for quite a while. To develop your inner qualities, your spiritual nature. Since today is the first day, it is going to be an introduction. Before we really meditate, we need to prepare ourselves. So whenever we want to do something, we need to prepare. To be prepared is very important. That's one thing that I've learned quite a long time ago. And I teach this to most of my friends and students too. Be prepared. If you are really prepared for something, then it's really surprising. It comes to you very easily and naturally. If you are not prepared, even though you get the opportunity, you'll miss the opportunity. You'll not be able to take it, receive it. So just like a farmer or a gardener who wants to grow flowers, vegetables, or rice, or wheat, anything, first of all, he needs to prepare the land. Without preparing the land, if you go and just scatter the seeds, some of them might sprout, but they will not bear fruit. Very soon they will die away because they cannot take root properly. Because there is not enough fertilizer. There is not enough nutriment for the plant and not enough water. So just like that. So as a farmer who wants to grow crops, he needs to prepare the land. So in preparing the land, it's cultivating the land and cultivating our inner qualities has many similarities. That's why maybe you know the meaning of the Pali word bhavana. Can somebody help me? What bhavana means? One of its meaning is cultivation. Bhavana literally means to make something grow. To grow something, that is bhavana. And the root of the word bhavana, Pali word, is bhu. The root of that word is bhu. So bhu means to grow, cultivation. So when you grow something, it implies that you have the seed. The seed could be a grain or even another part of a tree, a branch, it's also a kind of seed. So you already have something to grow. If you don't have any seed, you cannot grow. But just to have the seed is not enough. You have to prepare the land. So when you prepare the land, first of all, you pull out the weeds. If you want to grow, if you have a forest land, a wild area, and you want to grow something there, wheat or rice or corn, a farmer, first of all, clear the land. Cut away all the trees that are not really useful. Cut down the trees. So without doing that, we cannot grow any crop. We can only grow weed there. So first of all, pull out weeds, cut down unnecessary, useless trees. So that's something we should do in our life. Naturally, it's very natural for weeds to grow. You don't need to do anything, they grow very easily. So look deeply into your life, in the way you are living, in your lifestyle, and find out what kind of weeds are there growing. Some of them have been there for a long time and took very strong root, have grown very well. So it might take some time to really dig the roots out, just like a very bad habit, drinking or some other things like that. Very bad habits, it takes some time to work very hard. So pull out weeds is very important, and removing stones. So a farmer removes all the stones and rocks from the land, so that the land will become smooth, soft. Because if there are stones, plant cannot take root very well. You cannot cultivate, you cannot till or plow the land very well. And then till the land. Make the soil become soft so that roots can take in. Roots can grow very easily. And then the farmer puts some sort of manure or compost. If you are interested in doing gardening, you'll know that. Put some compost, because compost, they become fertilizer, and also they absorb moisture, keep the soil soft, wet, damp, so that it can retain water longer. So put manure, fertilizer, and irrigate. So irrigate has two meanings. If the land is dry, you put water into the land, into the field. If it is too wet, you drain the water out of it. So that means a farmer who wants a good crop has to work very hard just to prepare the land first before growing anything on it. And then later, the farmer sow seeds, scatter seeds on the land. And when the seeds germinate, the farmer needs to take care very, very carefully, attend to the field, going to the field every day and watching how the plants are growing, whether they are growing well or not, whether there's too much water or too little water, or whether there are any other insects or animals destroying the crop, so that you have to drive away crops. Once I lived in the forest where they grow peanuts, the farmers have to watch the land every day because wild pigs come and dig up peanuts and eat away. So you have to protect your land too from being destroyed. You have to protect your crop, especially when they are very young. They are very vulnerable. Take care of them very well. So the same thing it is. We have to prepare ourselves, our mind, our way of life, uproot all the weeds, remove stones, and make the land even, soft, gentle, so that the germinating seed can take root easily, and protect it. So a good farmer works on his field every day. If you want a good crop, you have to work on it every day. So I live in a forest and live among farmers and gardeners. I know how hard they work. They love their land. Some people say, but I cannot stay at home. I have to go into the farm, into my garden, and work on the land. One man said, I just love to handle soil. I just love to handle seeds. I just love to put them in the soil. And then this person is a gardener, he grows flowers too. He will make a small place to just germinate some seeds. And then he will take the seedlings out very carefully with a kind of spoon. Spoon out the seed and put in a small packet. And then put it under a shade and sprinkle water very carefully. He said, I just love doing that. So to love something, is very important. If you really love to do something, you will have energy and time. You devote yourself to that purpose, to that work. It is not a work anymore. It is a kind of hobby. So, if you love to do something, then you don't bargain. Most people ask me, how long do I need to sit to develop samadhi? How long I need to meditate to attain nirvana? How can anybody tell how long? If you really love doing, you are happy that you are doing. And that happiness and joy gives you a lot of motivation. Love motivates you, and when you are doing something you love, you feel very happy about it, and that happiness motivates you. So please don't bargain. People want to give as little as possible and get as much as possible. I think this is not the right attitude, especially in meditation. And not only in meditation, in other things in our life too, especially in our relationships. If you want to give little and get too much, you will not get anything. So the rule here is, you get as much as you give. If you give a little bit, you will get a little only. If you give yourself totally away, you will really get quite a lot. So, in practicing meditation, look deep into your mind. Why are you doing this? Are you really willing to do this? And when you do something, no matter what kind of thing you do, there are some sacrifices you need to face, which means you need to give up some of the things in your life. Like when you come here to meditate or to attend this class, you already have given up some things, otherwise you'll be out somewhere enjoying. So, I talked about this a few weeks ago. Our human nature is basically spiritual. We have very beautiful qualities like loving kindness, compassion, mindfulness, peace of mind. We already have the seed for it, and we really want that seed to grow. Human nature is very mixed nature. So, in one part, we want to enjoy sensual pleasure, and another part of us doesn't want to enjoy anything at all. We want to give up. So, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Somebody said that, and I like that very much, and this is really true. If you really want to learn something, in some ways, somebody will show up to teach you that, or in some cases, you happen to read some book, and there in the book is the answer to your question. Maybe this, some of you might have experienced that. And many people I know express the same thing. When they are really intent on trying to find out something, and they keep that in their mind all the time, every day, they don't forget about that. They're always thinking of, I want to know this, I want to know this, I want to find out. And they're always ready, alert, looking for something. And in some cases, they just happen to be near somebody who's talking about it. And he said, this is just what I want to know. And they feel very happy and surprised. This is just what I need. And in some cases, they just pick up a book and open it, and there the answer they are looking for. So if you are really looking for something, then when the opportunity comes, you can take it. For example, like digging gems. Some people, they go and they dig gems. Because they are looking for something, when they find that, they know what it is. If you don't know what you are looking for, then even though you see gems in the coming out from the earth, you will not know it is gem. So if you really know what you are looking for, you'll find it. So look very deeply. Here all of us are not young anymore. We have done so many things in our life. We know that nothing really fulfills. We have never found anything in possession or in pleasure that really gives us lasting satisfaction. So we are really looking for something else. When we are truly ready to receive, then what we need will become available, which means the same thing. When we are truly ready to receive, so ask yourself, am I ready to receive? Am I really prepared? What am I doing? Do I really deserve it? If you want something, you need to feel that you deserve that. And to feel that you deserve it, you need to be doing something, which is necessary. As much as in your knowledge or wisdom, you know what to do. So before we meditate, or even when we are meditating every day, there are a few things that we have to reflect on just to prepare our mind. Because in our daily life we get distracted by so many things. So just to make our mind suitable for meditation, we have to think of a few things, like death. Life is very short. Very soon we'll be gone. Now most of us are average 50 years old, and some of you are 60, 70 years old. Very soon this life will be over. And if we have the awareness and clarity just before we die to reflect on what we did in our life, what would we find really satisfying? I've been very close to death quite a few times. Once because I was very sick with malaria for many, many days, and maybe it's months, living in a forest with no medicine, couldn't eat. So my body got very, very weak, and I was about to die, very close. My friends were around me, and they were saying that, oh, he's unconscious, he's in coma. I heard that, but I could not move anymore. This is a very strange situation. People think that I was unconscious, but I hear what they were saying. And later I found out that many people have the same experience. Especially doctors know that. Even though a patient seems to be unconscious, he can hear something. Even though in some cases they are under anesthetic, they still hear something. So at that time, I reflect on what I did all my life, and I found out that I've never done anything really satisfying. I had a degree, I had a job, and got married, and did many other things. I was successful in many things, but that doesn't mean anything to me anymore. The only thought that came into my mind, which was really what gave me some satisfaction, was that I learned to meditate. And even at that moment, I turned my mind to meditation. Okay, give up. If I die, I die. Never mind. But I want to die mindfully. I want to die meditating. That was the only thing that gave me some peace of mind, something I can rely on. The rest of the things are not around me. So, to prepare our mind to meditate, we need to reflect on this shortness of life. No matter how long we live, it might be 70, 80, 90, even 100 years, it's not that long. If you think of the life of this world and compare that with our life, it's like a split second. So, think of the shortness of life and then try to tell yourself that there is no time to waste. Time is very, very precious. There's no time to waste. And time is life. If we ask somebody, do you want to live a long life? He or she will say, of course I want to live a long life. But what are you going to do if you live a long, long life? What are you going to do? Then, for most of us, we have no clear answer. We don't really know what we want to do with our life. We just want to live a long life. That shows that we are just attached to our life, but we don't really know how to make the most of it. So if you look really mindfully and make the best use of your time, then you can achieve, like say in 1 year, you can achieve something that for most people it will take about 5 years to achieve. This is quite possible. So you can make 1 year into equal to 5 years. So if you live only for about 60 or 70 years, if you make the best use of that time, it seems like you live for 200, 300 years. So much of our time we waste because we are so unmindful. So the moment, the time that you are mindful, you get it. The time when you are not mindful, you don't get it, you lose it. So the more unmindful we are, the less we get. The more mindful we are, the more we get. So only when we live mindfully and fully in the present, we get that time. Well, whenever we are not mindful, tell yourself, I've lost it. So when we understand that life is short and time is precious, and because we have developed some sort of understanding about Dharma and we are practicing and learning, it becomes more precious. The more we understand, the more we make the best use of our time, the more precious our time becomes. So don't procrastinate. Do what should be done today. We don't know whether we will still be alive tomorrow. So this is a part of a Pali verse. And here the Pali verse, Ajjeva Kicham Matapan. Maybe some of you heard of it. Ko Jamya Maranan Suwe. So Ajjeva means today. Right now, today, kitchen, matapa. Kitchen means what should be done. Matapa means try to accomplish, try to do. So today, what should be done? Do it. Ko zinya, ko, who? Zinya knows. Maranam, death, to be tomorrow. Who knows that tomorrow we will die? We don't know that tomorrow we will be alive or dead. So, an earnest meditator does not procrastinate. Now is the time to meditate. No matter where you are, no matter what you are doing, that time and that place is time for meditation. So, thinking and reflecting thus, another thing we should think about is the quality of the Buddha. So Maranasati, Buddhanasati, the quality of the Buddha. So the more you learn about the Buddha, the more you'll know the nature, the purity, the wisdom of the Buddha. And when we think about the quality of the Buddha, what happens to our mind? The mind reflects the object of the mind. For example, when we think about something that makes us unhappy, what will happen to our mind? Naturally, we'll become unhappy. So this unhappiness of our mind depends on the object and depends on how we look at the object. So when we think about somebody we love, what happens to our mind? We develop loving kindness. We feel love. So, in the same way, when we think about the Buddha and his freedom, his wisdom, his peace, his purity, what would happen to our mind? Similar nature will arise in our mind. So it is very important to try to find more and more about the Buddha. And when we think about Buddha, we appreciate his qualities, and we want that qualities in us too. When we think about somebody happy, peaceful, free, we want that qualities too. And just by thinking about somebody who is free and peaceful and pure, makes our mind attracted to that sort of qualities. Makes that our goal. We want to be like that. I want to be like that. I want to be free, I want to be peaceful, I want to be wise. And that becomes our ideal. Although we will not become a Buddha, we will at least develop to a certain extent the qualities of the Buddha. So each of us, when we become enlightened, we become in a certain way a Buddha, a new Buddha. So Sammasambuddha, Pachakabuddha, and when a disciple practice meditation and develop deep insight and attain freedom, Nibbana, that person becomes a new Buddha. So when we take Buddha as an example, as a leader, as a teacher, we naturally make our goal his purity and freedom and wisdom. That becomes our goal. So that gives us a direction. Where am I going? What is my goal? What is my ideal? And also about the Dharma, think about the Dharma too, what the Buddha taught. The teaching of the Buddha is true. So since you've been meditating for quite a while and studying the teaching of the Buddha, you have some experience of the truth of the teaching of the Buddha. You know that it is true. You know that it will lead to calmness, peacefulness, purity, freedom, insight, wisdom. And the teaching of the Buddha is nothing, not something that we listen to and just believe it. It's not blind faith. You can find out for yourself. And it is very practical. So reflect like that. Studying Dharma and practicing meditation is worthwhile. It is really worth doing. Sometimes we waver. Should I meditate or should I go out and do something? Which is better? If you really know that meditation is much more worthwhile to do, then you can let go of some other distractions, some other enjoyment or pleasure, and give more time to meditation. So the benefits of meditation, keep thinking about that. So when you really know that meditation is worthwhile, then give your life to it. The more you give, the more you get. Do it with all your heart. Do it wholeheartedly. That is another requirement for success in doing anything at all. If you do something wholeheartedly, then you succeed. If you do something half-heartedly, after a while, because you don't make much progress, you'll think that, oh, I've been doing it for a long time, it doesn't get me anywhere. Maybe some people, they talk about deep insight and peacefulness and liberation and freedom and all that. It sounds very nice, but it's not really practical or real, not possible. You become discouraged like that. Because you do it half-heartedly, you don't really develop enough motivation to make any progress. Because you don't make any progress, you don't believe it anymore. So, to really benefit from meditation or doing anything at all, it is very important to do it wholeheartedly. So after reflecting on these things, another requirement is restraint. And I know some people who don't like to hear this word, because they think restraint is the opposite of freedom. Restraint means no freedom. But this is not true, it's different. What do you mean by freedom? Just to go out and do something that we want to do is not freedom. Freedom really means knowing what is useful, knowing what is beneficial, knowing what is worthwhile, knowing what is wholesome, and also knowing what is unwholesome, and choosing what is wholesome and good and right, and doing it wholeheartedly. That is freedom. That is a kind of freedom. So, restraint has many meanings. One is keeping the precepts. Why do we need to keep precepts? For lay people, it's 5 precepts or 8 precepts. For monks, more than 200. That is even not, that is not all actually. That is only the main precepts. More than 200. So when we start practicing these, we try to keep these precepts. At first we feel very cramped. At first we feel like we don't have room enough to move. We can't do anything. This is not allowed, that is not allowed. But when we train ourselves to keep these precepts, sometimes we make mistakes and we break the precepts, minor ones mostly. Anyway, we try again and again, and after a while, our mind begins to learn to live with this precept. So we are not really trying to keep it anymore. It becomes a nature. Then we feel very free. So what happens when we don't keep precepts? What happens when we kill or steal or commit adultery or tell lies or take intoxicants? What happens to that person? When a person who doesn't keep precepts, he cannot have any self-respect. So naturally, deep inside us, we know what is proper and what is not proper. We give in to the temptations. We give in to greed, we give in to anger, we give in to other sensual pleasures. But what happens when we don't restrain ourselves and give in to all these things? We do things that are improper. We harm ourselves and we harm other people. So in the process of harming other people, we harm ourselves too. There is no way we can harm another person and not harm ourselves. It is impossible. Even in very small cases, I've noticed that. Once in my monastery, it was raining, and there was a foot mat just out of my dome. And one little dog, let me call that dog he, because I have no other way of talking about it. I feel like these are people. They have a way of, they have consciousness, and they are very sensitive to it. And they are in many ways very similar. For example, because it was raining, this little dog wants to be in a dry place, just like me. When it rains, I want to be in a very dry place. I don't want to get wet. So this little dog came up to the makuti, makuti means a small hut, and he slept on the doormat. So whenever I want to go out, I can't open the door, because he was sleeping there. So sometimes I got very upset. This dog, I must teach him. I must teach him not to have to come and sleep here. So what I did, you know what I did? I got something like this, a container, a scoop, and took some water, and opened the door and threw the water on the dog. Just to teach him that you will get wet if you come here. But when I was doing it, suddenly my awareness came and I caught myself. My state of mind. What am I doing? What is my state of mind? And I found out that I was feeling some sort of pain. I was feeling like I'm not a good person. I'm not a compassionate person. I was a very cruel person. And that hurt me very much. It was very painful to be a cruel person. It was very painful to be not being compassionate, not being loving. Then I called myself and I saw that you are harming the dog, but the dog is not really, just by getting wet, he's not really harmed. But what harmed me most is losing my peace, my tranquility, my self-respect. That is more harmful. So in many instances, I noticed that again and again. Sometimes I was not deliberately harming anybody. Let's say, for example, somebody came. I was not feeling very friendly. I just tried to go away. Unfriendly. Don't want to give my time to that person. Oh, this person is coming again. I don't have so much time for him. So I won't go out and see him or receive him. And then when I look into my mind, I find out that I can give some time for this person if I want to. Just a few minutes. But I feel very cold in me, very hard. Not loving, not kind, not warm. And when I watched that, I found that it's very painful. To ignore a human being is very painful. Not to acknowledge, not to feel loving, not to feel kind. It's very painful. So I lose my respect, my self-respect. So whenever you do something like that, you lose your self-respect. That is very painful. That is very harmful. So in some cases, we have to put a limit. But even when you put a limit, we should do that with understanding and with kindness, not with coldness. So when we don't keep 5 precepts, then we harm others and we harm ourselves too. So these precepts are not arbitrary, it is not imposed by somebody, it is nature. Deep inside us, we know that not keeping 5 precepts is improper, harmful. So even though a person may not be keeping 5 precepts, deep inside him, he has respect for those who keep 5 precepts, those who restrain themselves. He has respect and admiration or appreciation for those who are loving, kind, generous. So when we lose our self-respect, then we don't feel worthy. When we don't keep precepts, we lose our self-respect. When we lose our self-respect, we don't feel worthy. And when we don't feel worthy, what happens? Even though we do something, because we don't feel worthy, we don't give ourselves. We do things half-heartedly. So those who feel unworthy will not really try their best. They will fool themselves, pretend like they are doing something, but they are not really doing it. So to feel worthy of something is very important. To feel worthy of love, to feel worthy of freedom, peacefulness, deep wisdom, understanding. So you can only rise as high as your self-esteem. This is very, very important. You can only rise as high as your self-esteem. So how can you bring up your self-esteem? You do what is right. You avoid doing what is wrong. To say it very plainly. So when you have self-esteem, then you have self-confidence too, self-respect too. So when you have these things, then you believe that you are a good person. When you do what is good and when you avoid doing what is not good, bad, then you feel that you are a good person. And that is very important. To develop higher wisdom, to develop peacefulness, quietness, concentration, mindfulness, to develop all those spiritual qualities, we need to believe that we are good. If you don't believe that you are good, I don't think you will have real motivation to do any good. So we have to train ourselves not to do what is improper, not to do what is unwholesome, and to do what is proper and wholesome with right attitude, wholeheartedly, then that will make us feel that I am a good person. I am worthy. I'm worthy of even better things in my life. So can you positively tell yourself that I like myself? It's very important. Just look deep into your mind, feel it. Say yourself, I like myself. Do you really believe that? Do you feel happy saying that? If you really like yourself, when you say, I like myself, you feel really warm and happy. Because you know that it is true. You are saying something positive, saying something which is true. So if you feel that you don't like saying that, then your inner nature is saying something that you cannot like yourself. This couldn't be true. Another thing, I love and approve of myself. Can you say that really positively, with ease, with truthfulness? I love and approve of myself. So try to do as much as possible all the good things that you know, so that you feel that you like yourself, you love yourself, you approve yourself. So some people who are doing things that are unwholesome, they don't want to think about themselves. They want to forget about themselves. They want to distract themselves watching or listening or doing some other things, so that they will not be thinking about it themselves. So I met one person in America long time ago. It was in 1983-84. This person came to the monastery. So whenever a person comes to the monastery, I talk with that person, because I was the only one who can speak English in that monastery. So whenever somebody, a visitor comes, I was the person to talk with the visitor. So this person came, a lady, and many other men come too, but this lady's story is really interesting to say. Very extreme case, so it's more interesting. So first I asked her, what do you expect? Why do you come to this monastery? I just want to know your expectation, your motivation. Why did you come to this place? Who told you about this place? She said, a friend told me about this place. And what do you expect? And she said, first of all, she said, I couldn't sleep. I want to sleep. So I want to find a way, a kind of practice, so that it will help me to go to sleep. But when I talk to this person more and more and watch this person's behavior, expressions, I noticed that this person has a lot of aggression in her heart. Although she was trying to be nice, she was very aggressive. So I thought her to develop some sort of metta. Because when you develop metta, you feel very warm and relaxed. And it can put you to sleep. Just thinking about good things about other people can make you feel so good that it will make you relax and you can fall asleep. If you have metta, you don't dream bad dreams. And you wake up very clear and cheerful. So as a basis for meditation, I told this lady to practice metta meditation, loving kindness meditation. So naturally, I gave her the usual instruction to think about her parents and to wish them well, to wish them happy, and to think about teachers who were kind to her, who taught her many things, and think of them, wish them happiness, wish them well. And so, I'm sorry, the first thing I taught her was to develop metta for herself. May I be happy, may I be well. Think about the good things about yourself. So this person went away. And the next day, she came back for an interview. And I asked her, did you practice metta meditation? And she said, no. And I asked her, why not? This is something we should do. If we really want to meditate, if you really want to be happy and peaceful, and if you really want to go to sleep. He said, I couldn't do that. I said, why? When I think about my parents, I hate them. When I think about myself, I hate myself. When I think about my teachers, I don't feel like they've done anything for me. Why should I be grateful? Why should I think of them and say, may they be happy and peaceful? I cannot do that. So I was very surprised to hear that. I said, naturally, people love themselves. And why can't we do that? He said, when I think about myself, I hate myself. And yes, that is the worst, the least thing, the last thing I want to do, is to think about myself. So I said, I'm very surprised to hear that. This is not judging or condemning you. I'm really, really surprised. Isn't there anybody in this world for whom you feel love, kindness? Just think of, just somebody, anybody in this world for whom you can feel some sort of loving kindness. So she just sat there for a long time, very quietly. And then he said, I love my dog. Very surprising. And he said, it's not really my dog. It's the dog of my roommate. I live in a house. I share that house with another person. So that dog belongs to my friend. And I love that dog. When I play with that dog, I feel happy. Then at last I told her, just think of that dog. Feel that love. That love for the dog. But later she tried very hard to develop metta and try to be very mindful while eating, while walking, doing anything, while sitting. So one night she woke up in the middle of the night and went out for a walk. It was moonlit night, very bright outside. She was alone walking outside. And she felt, suddenly she felt so much peace. Suddenly she felt very peaceful and happy. She felt very good about herself. She felt happy that she was meditating. She felt happy that she was thinking, sometimes she was thinking of her dog with this love. And from that time, her life changed. So love for anybody, even for an animal, is very nourishing, very nourishing. So if you can cultivate that love for everybody, it will give you so much energy. It will nourish your heart. It will make you feel so good about yourself. You will feel that I am a loving person. I love. And then you feel worthy of love too. I love, I'm loving, and I'm worthy of love. So she practiced meditation for a long time, many, many months. In fact, more than a year. But she came to the monastery just because she wanted to learn to go to sleep. But at last, she learned something more than that. She didn't take herself as a Buddhist. But when I left America, she came to the airport to see me go. And in the airport, international airport, she sat down and paid respect to me. Among many people, I said, not necessary to do that. Please, don't do that here. She said, it's never mind. You have gave me something, not something to believe. You have taught me how to live my life, how to have the right attitude, how to make the most of my life, how to develop my good qualities. And I thank you very much for that. So to feel worthy of metta, love, to feel worthy of something good is very important. Unless you have that, you cannot meditate. So do something to develop that more and more. So I love and approve of myself. Another thing is, tell yourself, I am willing to release the past. No matter what happened in the past, good or bad, let go. Everything is finished, over. Because when you think of the good things that we've done in the past, we feel very proud of that. Oh, I was this, I was that. You know, it is very touching sometimes. Sometimes I ask older people in Burma, and also some people here, I ask the person, what do you do? What are you sometimes in Burmese? Who are you or what are you? Like that. So this person said, I was. I was somebody big, I was a director, I was a minister, I was this, I was that. But I was asking, who are you? Present tense. When I asked the question in present tense, that person gave me the answer in the past tense. Why is that? He was holding on to the past. I was somebody, but now I am nobody. So he could not accept himself as nobody. He was a director, he was a minister, he was something, but now he's nobody. So he was holding on to his position, his status in the past. So if you keep holding on to the past, then you cannot really develop meditation. Let go of the past. So whether you are success or failure in the past, whether you did something good or bad, let go. But if you have done good things, then you can feel happy about that. But even that happiness, don't cling on to that. I offered a monastery. I was a supporter of a big monastery. Some people hold on to that. So let go of the past. I am willing to release the past and live fully in the present. Just tell yourself, I am willing to live fully in the present. In the present, now, here. I don't want to think on the past too much. But you need to remember some of the things that you learned in the past. When it is necessary to think about it. Because it's useful. But don't dwell on it. Don't keep thinking about it. So to live fully in the present, willingness to live fully in the present is very important. I am willing to change and to grow. That is also very important, to change and to grow. So although we want to learn something, we want to become a better person, in many cases we are afraid to change, to grow. And another thing is, can you tell yourself positively, I am doing the best I can. This is preparing yourself. Before you meditate, you ask yourself, can you say that I am doing the best I can? We can do quite a lot, actually, incredibly, quite a lot of good things we can do. But because of distraction, and also because of laziness, because of lack of confidence in ourselves, in the practice, in the teacher, in the method, or whatever, we don't really try to do our best. So, I am doing the best I can. Can you say that? I am responsible for myself and my life. Whatever happened, no matter what happened in your life, oh, my parents did this and that, and my brothers did this and that, my father did this and that, my husband, my wife, or somebody, my friend, don't blame on anybody for anything that happened to you. If you blame on somebody, that means you are not taking responsibility for yourself. Many people I've met, they are always blaming others for their unhappiness. But they are not trying to really learn, to really practice something so that they become more peaceful and happy. So, I am responsible for myself and my life. So tell that to yourself positively. You are responsible for your happiness and for your unhappiness too, if you are unhappy. Another thing is, I am worthy of the good in my life, of all the good in my life. I am worthy of all the good in my life. Respect from others too, respect for yourself too, love from others too, support from others. Support from your family, from your teacher, and also worthy of real peace and happiness and freedom. Tell yourself, I'm worthy of all the good in my life. And another preparation is, I will only think about wholesome thoughts. Very difficult to do that. Most of our time, we are thinking all the time actually, that most of our thoughts are unwholesome. Greedy, angry, proud, envy, jealousy, During the day, throughout the day, try to see what you are thinking about. This is not real meditation. This is just preparation, I mean. So all throughout the day, try to find out what you are thinking about. Don't try to control it in the beginning, because you will not be able to control it. But whenever you find yourself thinking about something unwholesome, try if you can think about that same person or thing from a different angle. See if you can learn something from that situation. Let's say, for example, somebody says something bad about yourself, accuses you about something that you never did. How would you react to that situation? Naturally, you would say that this person is really telling a lie. He's a bad person. She is a bad person. And in your mind, you'll be retaliating. You'll be reacting. You'll be thinking about something bad about that person too. She's a bad person. She's not a good person. She's telling a lie. She's very envious because I'm happy or successful because I have more money or something better than her or him. He's really jealous. Because I get a promotion, he is jealous. She is jealous. She's not a good person. So whenever you find yourself thinking any kind of negative thought about anybody or any situation, try to see if you can learn something from that situation. To become positive about that situation. Or this person is teaching me a lesson. This person is trying to teach me so that I can learn not to react. Or another way of saying is that when somebody tells you something bad about you, try to say honestly, truthfully, something good about that person. Or think about good, something good about that person. Or although this person is saying something bad about me, he or she is did something good. But that should be something honest. You cannot fool yourself. So, this is in Pali called niyamita, which means you determine, you tell yourself that I will try my best to think something good and positive as much as possible. Whenever I find myself thinking something unwholesome or negative, I'll try my best to turn around and see it from a positive angle. So, the more positive you think, the more peaceful your mind will become. So if you think negative thoughts, unwholesome thoughts all day, and then you come and sit and meditate and expect to be peaceful and happy, no, you cannot do that. You have not prepared yourself. You have not prepared your mind. So thinking from a positive and wholesome way is in Pali called yoni so manasikara. Yoni so manasikara. Reflecting properly, thinking properly. It is quite natural. In this world, sometimes we experience, we get what we want, sometimes we don't get what we want. Sometimes we have plenty, sometimes we don't have enough. Sometimes we have friends around who support us, sometimes we don't have anybody around to support us. We are very alone. So sometimes we get praised, sometimes we get blamed. There's nobody in this world who is not blamed. Even Buddha was not an exception. And sometimes we have peace and happiness, sometimes we have pain, suffering. So it is quite natural for everybody to go through all these things, good and bad. So reflecting like that also helps you to let go, and to not get attached to. All throughout the day, have this yoni so manasikara. And another is restraint of the senses. So we are going about doing many things every day. We see so much, we hear so much. So limit yourself. Before meditating even, limit yourself that I will not go and see which is not really necessary to see. So it means also not to read too much too. Not to watch television too much. If it's really necessary to watch, watch it. If it's really necessary to read something, read it. But try to limit. If we don't put a limitation to what we do in our daily life, will not have enough time and energy to meditate. And everything we hear, everything we see, everything we think about, it churns our mind, makes our mind agitated. So to have less agitation, try your best to limit all these things. And purity of livelihood also is very important. How do you get what you need? Food, clothing, other necessary things. Get it in a very proper way. For example, one of my friends who's working in a big office once told me that they have a copy machine in their office. And because he's a meditator, he's very aware of his mental state, motivation. Whatever he does, he's very mindful. So before he meditated, he used the copy machine for his personal use. But later, when he developed more and more mindfulness, he noticed that every time he went to use this copy machine for himself, he felt guilty, as if he was stealing something. Because although nobody came and told him not to use it, if the purpose of the copy machine in the office is for office use, not for personal use. So when he washed his mind, he noticed that he felt very guilty. And from that time, he stopped using the copy machine for his personal purpose. This is only for office work. So, and another thing is, this person, sometimes when he goes to the office, he was late for about half an hour, sometimes, because of the traffic or for other reasons. And in the evening, sometimes he tries to leave the office half an hour earlier. So he was cheating 1 hour. And when he became more and more conscious, he noticed that this is kind of stealing. He was paid for every hour in the office, 8 hours or 9 hours a day, say from 9 to 5, he was paid for that. So later, when he went to the office half an hour late, he stayed half an hour longer in the evening. He wants to give it back. This is not my time. I was paid for this time. I'm selling my time, my energy, my talent. So even in these, in such small, or how do I say that? It's not really small actually, it's stealing really. In this kind of matter, you have to be very careful. Don't say that, oh, everybody does that. No, let them do what they want to do, because you are developing your spiritual qualities. You are trying to be a better person. You are trying to make yourself be worthy of real peace, real liberation, real insight. And also, whenever you use something, ask yourself, make yourself as simple as possible. If you make yourself, your life very complicated, you will not have enough time and energy, because everything you have demands your thought. If you have one thing, you have to think about it. At least you have to think about it. So when you want something, you think about it. When you have something, you think about it. You have to protect it. You have to look after it. Try to give away as much as possible and live as simple as possible. Have few clothing, and if you eat, make it very simple. Get enough nutrition. Eat healthy food, but don't make it too elaborate. Don't spend too much time for eating or for food, or I mean for clothing and some other things too. So whatever you have, it demands your time and energy. If you have more, then you have to give more time and energy. Whatever you have caused some sort of agitation in your mind. So my teacher, I talked about him once, in his monastery, in his housing, there is nothing. And it's really literally nothing. He has only 3 robes on his body, and he washes in turn, one at a time. His floor is very clean, polished, but he rubs it, clean it with a cloth only. No carpet, nothing. No luxury, no furniture. And he said, if you live in an empty room, then your mind becomes empty. It's quite natural. Go and see a supermarket and see what happens to your mind. Oh, so many things. All of them demand your attention. Trying to drag away your attention makes you unmindful. When you come into a room which is empty, no distraction. So if you really want to develop meditation practice, live a very simple life as much as possible. It depends on you. So I think I've used up quite a lot of time today. These things are very important. Without doing these things, if you meditate, sometimes you get some peace of mind, but mostly no. So it is like cultivating a land, a farmer cultivating land. Weed. So look very deep into your mind. Every day try to weed out, because every day weed seeds from the weeds are coming into your mind and they will take root. If you let them stay there longer, it will be harder for you to root it out. If you see them when they come in, then immediately you can pick the seed and throw it away. Before it germinates, you can throw it away. So prepare as much as possible. If you are really prepared, then the rest of the work will be much easier. So I think I should stop here today. I have many more things to say, but next time when we meet again. So in the meantime, try to remember what I told you today and try to put it into practice as much as possible. Look into your mind and see what you are thinking about. Every time you see something you are thinking about, I hold something, try to turn it around. Learn something from it. Make your life as simple as possible. See no loving thoughts, think no loving thoughts about yourself and about other people too. And about death, about the shortness of life. If you have any question, later in the next week, I would like you to ask more questions. I'll say something and you must ask me questions. Because only by asking questions you get a very clear idea. If you don't understand and if you don't ask questions, you will not really make any progress. So today, yes? Yes? Next week I have to continue about what I talked about today, a little bit, something's left. And then I will go on to discuss about what is the object of meditation. And this is also a very important topic. What is the object of Vipassana meditation? People understand that very vaguely, but when you really discuss about it, you find out that most people really don't know where to keep your mind, how to keep your mind on the object. And then slowly and slowly, gradually, how to develop more and more mindfulness and insight until the first stage of enlightenment. Actually, in these classes, I would like to talk about something and want to answer your questions more. And after that, you can stay here and meditate as much as you want. This is a kind of clarifying. Any kind of incomplete or inaccurate idea you have about knowledge, about meditation, I want to help you clarify that, make the understanding complete. Actually, that's what I do with Venerable Nyanari Sodhi in the night. We plan to spend about 1 hour, but always we end up discussing 2 hours. And it's very interesting and very rewarding too. And I feel a lot of joy having the opportunity to use myself to help another person to understand.
Giving up, maybe letting go and start. My question is, maybe a few of the things that come from different moms being interested in music and playing a little bit. And so the business has become quite a little shame out of it.
Yes.
So the question is kind of this. Is something that you're very attached to lifestyle? Many practice meditation, there's been very let it go, or is there a point at which you decide that actually this is taking up too much time?
In the beginning, I won't suggest that we stop it completely. Give up little by little. But be very honest. See if you can give up something. And especially talking about music, I think I've told you about myself too. I love music. I was a musician when I was young. And in fact, because of the love for music, I came in contact with another person who was a musician and also who was a very good meditator. You can be a musician and also you can be a good meditator. Actually, my first meditation teacher was a layman who was a musical instrument maker and also a musician. But even while he was making musical instruments, even when he was playing musical instruments, he was doing it with all his attention, with real care, with real love, real appreciation. And the kind of music that he played was very soothing, very calm and peaceful. Again, even now I can think of this music. Very calm and peaceful music. So if you really love music, try to find that kind of music that has a calming and soothing effect on your mind. You don't need to give up everything, but you can give up as much as you can. Do it slowly and slowly, gradually. And you won't feel it difficult in the end to give up.
But
it
relates to people.
If that really disturbs your meditation practice, you have to decide which you will choose. But if it doesn't really disturb your meditation practice, you can have a limit, actually. You can do that, yes, you can do that. Even while listening to music, you hear the sound, you hear your attention, you're aware of your attention, your mind. And sometimes when you do that very attentively, mindfully, you hear the sound passing away, you hear the hearing passing away. It's very interesting. So as a lay person, you don't have to give up everything. But you can put a limit to whatever you do. Overcome, I gave him a place. In the corner, not in, right in front of my door. That's the only solution. I gave him an old rug to sleep on. Because poor dog, he wants to be in a dry place. And felt very happy about that. Anytime you show some kindness to any being, it makes you very happy. It's very nourishing. It helps your practice. Be kind as much as possible. Sometimes you get angry, sometimes you become very cruel. And even in that sort of situation, you can learn from that experience too. Learn to forgive yourself too. You will never be perfect. But just ask yourself, I'm trying, am I trying my best? Any more questions? So you've been meditating for quite a long time. Try your best. Every moment of peace has tremendous effect on the mind, even for a few seconds. Peace of mind, no matter how momentary, is of great value. No matter how momentary, it gives you a contrast. So every time your mind becomes peaceful, even for a few seconds, gives you a contrast. I can be like this if I really choose to. So choose to be mindful, even for a few seconds. Choose to be peaceful. We are always making a choice. So make a choice. Like say, for example, when Ramayana Rishabhi and I talks about life of a monk. Life of a monk is not easy. People think that, oh, they get whatever they need. They don't have to worry about that. Then why do most people just go? So we choose to be a monk. Every moment, every day, I choose to be a monk. I can choose to become a layman if I choose to. Until a person attains anagami magga, a monk can choose to become a layman. But we always choose to be a monk. This is a choice. So we choose to be mindful. Well, I don't blame anybody who disrobes. It's not easy to be a monk. So if a person becomes a monk and practice and learn, it's very good for him. It's a kind of learning process. More questions? Louder, please. Yes. Yes. Many people. Yes. Naturally, I think more here. In my forest monastery, mostly I live alone there. Sometimes I have another friend, but we don't talk much. We live in a separate houses, places, and we eat in our own place alone. We go to the village to get our food alone, not together. And we meditate in our own place, we don't meditate together. Sometimes we talk, discuss about Dharma. And sometimes when we don't feel well, so we ask for help, we give help. And sometimes when we have something to do, we do it together. But mostly, we go for alms alone, we eat our food alone, we sleep in our own place alone, we go for a shower alone, and we walk in the forest alone mostly. So naturally, the mind becomes very calm and quiet, more mindful, more peaceful. Yes. And then when I come to big cities, and especially to a place like this, I think more about what to say. Even when I sit and meditate, I'll be giving a Dhamma talk. Thinking what to say, how to say that, because speaking a foreign language, English, is not easy. It's very stressful. You know what you want to say, but you don't have the words. But anyway, it's a very satisfying experience for me. Whenever I help another person to clarify, to learn something, I feel great joy. And also, another thing that I learn is, if you know something, and if you don't share what you know with another person, you are not fulfilling your duty, but I don't want to say use the word duty. My understanding is that whoever knows should share that knowledge. If you don't know, then you don't need to share because you don't know. But if you know and you don't share that knowledge with somebody, you are withholding something. And deep in our nature, I think this is a necessity. To share. It is our nature to share. So I arrange my life so that I can stay in the forest for at least 4 months with no visitors, no talking, not much talking. Quite alone, studying, meditating. And then this is 4 months at a stretch, no break in between, no traveling. Nobody coming. And after that, sometimes I go to a big city and spend about a month each day and come back again, stay in the forest for a month or two, and in that period I receive some visitors, very limited. If they really want to ask something about meditation, they can. But just coming for a visit is not encouraged. Just because they haven't been there, they can come and they can go if they want to, but only if they want to ask a question, they can come and talk with me. And then again, I will go out again to a big city and teach something, give discussions, counseling, spiritual counseling. If they have any problem in their life, if they understand Dharma properly, they can solve the problem. Many of our problems are actually spiritual. All psychological problems are basically spiritual. If you have the right attitude and the right understanding, you can deal away with a lot of psychological problems. So this is the way I live my life. So I come here to spend 4 months here, then I'll go back and stay in my own place very quietly. And coming here is also part of my learning process. I'm learning quite a lot of things here. So it is necessary for my growth too. We need to have a kind of balance in our life. Time for ourselves and time for others too. If we live only for ourselves, we will not feel satisfying. We will not feel fulfilled. So do whatever you can for others. This is another topic I want to discuss. If you really want to be happy, help others to be happy. Well, even though it's in a small way, try to give yourself. Not easy, it is not easy. But the more you can open up yourself, the more you can give, the more you become mature. So thank you for that question. This is something I want to express actually. You give me the chance to express it. Have a balance in your life. Only for a while. The thing that really disturbs you most is if you do something wrong. But if you do something right, although it causes you to think much, you don't feel guilty about that, you feel happy about it actually. And if you watch the thoughts, because of that happiness, it doesn't disturb your mind much and it will go away. The most disturbance comes from unwholesome thoughts and actions. So I'm very glad about what I'm doing here. So it's not painful. Any more questions? Even if I meet one person who is really intent to learn, I'll feel satisfied. But I hope all of you learn something. So I feel very, very satisfied. Half an hour? Yes. Very good to meditate. Yes. If you have no questions anymore, it is always good to meditate. So if you have to go, please feel free to go. Don't feel guilty. But if you can, this is something you can do for yourself. This is the best present you can give to yourself. Meditate.